You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Hello, hello. Welcome back, friends. It is good to see you all. Thank you so much for joining us. It is April 24th, 2019. And you already know this. This is the A-Side Live Chat Podcast. I hope all of you out there are having a tremendous start to your week. We appreciate you all so much for joining us today. And this is a bit of a weird show. By now, it is no secret. This will indeed be the last episode for the S&M team before Mark moves on to ESPN next week. We're all very happy for him. I could not be prouder of my guy. I'm sure we'll talk about it at some point this on the show. The A-side will indeed continue. I will also talk about that more at the end of today's show. But first, for one last time, let me bring in my guy here, the OG, the hardest working man in the business, the California King himself, Mr. Mark Raimondi. What is up, Mark? How are things over in the kingdom?
What an entrance. Thanks, man. This is a weird one today, but I don't want to focus too much on that stuff because people are not really here for us to talk about us. They're here to talk for us to talk about mixed martial arts and all of the goings on in that universe. So I want to keep it to that for the most part. But things are going well, Sean. It's been a little bit of a weird week. Very very bittersweet. Feeling a little emotional these days. But here we are, one last time as a duo. Maybe not the last time, but for now. For now. What is it that Ariel said when he left last year? It's not goodbye. It's just farewell for now. Something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing. I have no idea what he said.
You really butchered that, I think.
I completely destroyed it. What I'm saying is it's never fully a goodbye because I'll see you soon. Maybe not in a show format, but we'll be hanging next month in Vegas, right?
Yes, sir. And I like that you went back to the sauna for one last trip.
I had to go back to the sauna. Yeah. I mean, it's part of A-side lore. I feel like we didn't do the show for a very long time, but for the time that we did do it, I feel like we developed like a lot of hardcore fans, a lot of very loyal A-side watchers, and that really I'll talk about this later, but it means a lot, like seeing the responses the last 2 days. It really does. It really means a lot. I'm not a very emotional guy on that side of things. I'm an emotional guy. Like, I get fired up and I like to yell, but not so much on the other side. But it's been an emotional week.
Yeah, I will say the response has been pretty overwhelming. I think just the love and support we've heard from you guys, we definitely do hear it and we appreciate it. And like you said, we will talk about probably that more later on the show, but let's try to get into some MMA first. And we are just days removed from the immortal Alistair Overeem keeping his title hopes alive in Russia. And now this week we have a little bit of a doubleheader on Saturday with UFC Fort Lauderdale and Bellator 220, latter of which Burt McDonald, John Fitch return in the welterweight Grand Prix. That's something good. Plus the potential return of Tony Ferguson and a whole lot more. But as we always say, this is your guys' show. So we'll talk about whatever it is you want us to talk about. You can ask us a question on the MMA Fighting page below. Any question that gets three recommendations, those will turn green and get priority. Or you can ask this question on Twitter using the hashtags #TheAside or chat rappers. And also one last thing before we get started. This has now been 2 weeks in a row where I'm telling you different things, but I have to tell you a different thing entirely now. 2 weeks ago, I told you about a new MMA fighting podcast channel that we were starting where it was going to be the MMA Hour, Euro Bash, Pizzi Carroll. This great show, the A-Side and the MMA Beat all in one. And then I told you last week that wasn't happening. Now I'm going to flip it up again because it is happening. That's the final decision. There will be no more changes. It is indeed happening starting April 28th. We're joining forces with the other three shows in this for a podcast network that will be called MMA Fighting. So that will be available April 28th. You subscribe to that on Apple Podcasts, you will get all of, or wherever else, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud. I know we're still not on Spotify anymore, and we were trying to fix that. But April 28th, MMA Fighting podcast feed, you will get all of our great shows. And that's the final word. Even if it changes, I'm not going to do another read on it because that's the final word. That's where we're going with April 28th. So look out for that. In the meantime, replay of this show is going to be up immediately on all the various places. And let's get to it, Mark. I think we have some questions today. We have quite a few questions today to answer.
Yeah, you want to start us off from? I feel like Mr. Jay DeLuca, when he asks very good questions, his questions are excellent. The man, as an editor, you gotta condense these questions, my guy. You gotta break these down. Like you could ask these questions in a much tighter package than what's happening here. It's we're trying to make for some good show, some good TV, some good radio here, and it's very hard to do that when it's literally like an article. Like I've written smaller articles for MMAfighting.com, I think, than what you're writing here. Not to kill you, man. Like you have great questions, but let me condense this question. It's about John Fitch.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Okay, so the question is about John Fitch. John Fitch was he's obviously fighting Rory McDonald at Bellator 220. He's challenging for the Bellator welterweight title. That's also a Bellator World Welterweight Grand Prix first round matchup. Very good card on Saturday from San Jose. Fitch was on the MMA Hour. He was on Ariel Helwani's MMA show, and he was talking a lot about, as we know, he's very active in fighters' rights with the MMA FA trying to get the Ali Act passed for mixed martial arts, extended to mixed martial arts.
Hold on. This is you condensing a question? This is already longer than his question. What's going on?
Yeah, but my delivery is more entertaining than no, I'm just kidding. So basically the questions are there's a few questions here, but basically the questions are he's saying that basically what Jay DeLuca is saying is that John Fitch is making some statements that are not proven, and he's saying things like once a fighter leaves UFC. I'm trying to condense what he's. I'm trying to figure out what he's like asking here.
We might as well have just read it at this point.
You know, I know. It's. I probably should have just read it. You know what? I quit. This is my last show. Forget it. I'm done after this, Sean. I'm done after this, Ashadi. I'm quitting.
Okay. So Jay DeLuca is. By the way, thanks Jay DeLuca for really starting off this show on such a great notice. Fucking sorry. I'm already swearing. Two back-to-back questions with 500 words each. Would you both agree that this is accurate or intentionally misleading by John Fitch, effectively saying that once a fighter leaves the UFC, they can never be truly paid as much or what he or she should have made while under the UFC umbrella? That's more or less the question it seems like that he is getting to. So Mark, would you agree with the assessment from this Jay DeLuca here that once a fighter leaves the UFC, they cannot get paid what they should be getting paid?
I think that and I didn't listen to both of the Fitch interviews, but I think in many ways Fitch does have a lot of good points about fighters' rights and about the UFC and about the marketplace, that whole deal. And I think that I think it's correct that if you leave the UFC, the ceiling from what you can make in the UFC is higher than anywhere else in the world. I don't think there's no dispute about that, because if you get in the UFC and you're a top star, you make the pay-per-view points, and you're making millions per fight, which is very hard to come by.
I don't know if that's true anymore, though.
Maybe not anymore with this new format with ESPN Plus, but that is the way it has been over the years, where the ceiling is always higher in the UFC if you become that level. Now, not everyone is going to achieve that level. I mean, that's just the way it goes. There's no way around that.
I mean, honestly, 97% of people aren't going to
achieve. Sure. I mean, but more than that, more of that percentage does get to be a UFC champion and does get to at least make pay-per-view points. They may not be making McGregor money or Ronda Rousey money, but they are making more than they could in other places, I would say. So in some ways, what John Fitch is saying is true, but also there are some things that I don't agree with as far as John Fitch. I'm of the belief that I feel like that there is more of a necessity for a union than there is the extension of the Ali Act. And I love what the Ali Act says and what it does. And in an ideal world, that would be great. But if we're being honest, it really is going unenforced in boxing. It's really going unenforced. I mean, there are some ways where it is being enforced, but there are also ways that it's not. And what's to say that if it gets passed, which by the way, I don't think it will in our current administration in the United States, what's to say that the UFC wouldn't just continue doing pretty much what they're already doing with a little bit of tweaks here and there under the Ali Act? With, again, it's not getting passed anyway, so it's kind of a moot point.
Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying there. I mean, I agree that the union is a better, it seems to be a more feasible, not only a more feasible, but also just a more effective tool to sort of get what the UFC and the UFC fight, not the UFC in particular, but just UFC fighters want out of this. But I will say, in regards to what John Fitch is saying, I would push back a little bit, because like you said, you can make the seven-figure paydays in the UFC if you're a big star. But really, how many people are there in the UFC who are making those paydays? I would say you could probably count them on one hand, right?
Sure.
And so on a roster of 800 fighters, that is such an infinitely small number. If you're, you know, a top 10 fighter, if you're maybe the number seven middleweight in the world, and then you go off to Bellator and they're willing to pay you, you know, a six-figure purse, guaranteed money every time you're fighting, I think that's probably as good as you were going to get in the UFC, considering all the limitations and the restrictions that are in the UFC. You also get sponsorship elsewhere, et cetera. I don't know. I push back a little bit on John Fitch saying that in a different promotion outside of the UFC, you can't get paid as much as you should have while under the UFC umbrella. I think that's true only for a very small percentage of fighters.
I think there are a number of fighters more than. You know, just a handful of making six figures per fight, but making over 500K, making over, more than a half a million, that is a very small amount. And we saw that at UFC 236, where there were two interim title fights and not one fighter on that card was making above 500K for their show money. So that was interesting too. And again, I think John Fitch, I think his heart is in the right place. And I think that he means well as far as fighters' rights goes, and I'm all about that. I'm all about fighters getting paid what they deserve. But John Fitch is also someone who was pushing the Pizzagate conspiracy. So I don't agree with everything that this man says. I do agree with some things, but there are some things that are very off the wall. So you kind of have to see, you know, what's happening here.
Was John Fitch pushing the Pizzagate?
He was pushing the Pizzagate conspiracy. Yes. Yes.
Oh my God. All right. Let's move on. thanks, Jay DeLuca. Your next question is also an article.
Even longer. This one's even longer.
I see that you're trying out for MMA fighting now that we have openings. Maybe submit me your resume instead of writing them on the live chat, but I'm going to condense this into like three sentences. Hi, Margaret Shaheen. Luke Thomas has interesting views on PEDs. What is your take on Luke Thomas's views? Do you think he deserves as much credit as he has been receiving from MMA fans on this? Has your own personal discussions with him been constructive? I shouldn't have even read that much. What are your take on Luke Thomas's views on PEDs? Mark,
I mean,
I don't know why we're being asked to defend Luke Thomas.
Well, not even being asked to defend Luke Thomas, but like we're on a show where people are asking us for our opinions and facts. And now we're being asked to give our opinion on someone else in the media's opinion, which is very, I mean, derivative, if not worse. I don't really talk to Luke. When I see Luke, we're not talking about PEDs. We're talking about, you know, our lives and what's going on. Like, we're friends. We're not talking about PED use in MMA all that often. what I will say is that I don't agree with everything that he says. I think that what he does say does come from a position of research and methodology and knowledge. I think he has studied the topic. The one thing that I will say that I disagree with, and I know that he's not as anti PED, I guess, as some others, and that's a very, very loose representation of his opinion. It's way more complicated than that. But I will say that when I think about anti-doping and PEDs in the sport of MMA, my focus is always going to be on the fighters who are not doing anything and the fighters who want a clean sport, which I think is by far, especially now, the majority of...
I don't know about
that. Well, let me finish.
I'm just saying, we've had about 5,000 arguments on the show and you're constantly defending PED users, but that's neither...
I am not defending PED users.
Hey, who's the GOAT? Who's the GOAT?
I'm sorry. What's that?
Who's the GOAT?
John Jones.
Oh, okay.
Look, every case is different, and I think that's also very important to note. I'm serious. You're laughing at me, but you can't argue with me on that one. Every single case is different. It's a case by case basis. No two cases are exactly alike, and it has to be taken in that way. There's no other way to do it. You cannot paint everyone with a broad brush when it comes to PEDs. And I believe Lucas said that as well. But what I was saying is that you have to also look at the people who are not on it, who are committed to a clean sport. And it's not, and it's really is just not fair for them if there are these people on PEDs where it's just not an even playing field. So that's my take on it.
Give me a second. I'm looking up your various rants about how great Anderson Silva is. Give me a half a second.
Yeah, Anderson is fantastic.
Fantastic. Oh my god. Luke's takes on PEDs. I mean, I don't know.
Are you a hypocrite, Sean Alshadi?
I would never call you that. We're too good of friends.
You're gonna call me that next week?
I would say between the three of us, me, you, and Luke, I probably am the strongest anti-PED person. I feel like that I'm a little more of the give and take of, did you just spill something?
No.
Seems like
everything's fine over here. Don't worry about me.
I'm probably the strongest of the three in terms of like staunchly being against sort of where people stand if they use, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, that's one man's opinion, and we're all going to have our different opinions. If we didn't have different opinions, how would this be any even remotely interesting? I mean, that's what makes the media interesting, right? Is hearing people talk about their different opinions and defend them. So I'm not going to argue with Luke when Luke's not here. So thank you, Jay DeLuca, for your tremendous start to our show. We appreciate you.
I do appreciate ThunderKiss65 writing in reply. The only thing worse than Luke Thomas talking about PEDs is 15,000 sentences about Luke Thomas on PEDs.
Well done. All right, next up, let's talk about something fun that happened this past weekend, man.
Yes.
Quick question for Mark. Actually, maybe I guess we could use this. Is Alistair Overeem next for Anderson Silva? Couldn't miss the episode. Best of luck, Mark. You got to love it. That's from our good friend Eduardo Bueno. One last one. I'm going to use this to skip to the Overeem question because I thought that's what this is going to be. This is next one's coming from Rob Holland, who's asking over and over and over him. That's a great headline. That is a great headline. This man has 9 lives in MMA. When you think he is done, he starts claiming W's again and in good fashion as well. Do you think he has another crack at the title, and how would you favor his style versus DC? Who do you think he will fight for the title when DC is gone? Have a good one. Man, this past weekend, Alistair Overeem did it again. He is nearing the age of 40, and this man has had 9 lives in MMA, and it continues to keep going for him. Gets that first round win over Alexei Oleinik. It was a wild ass fight. It was a very crazy fight for however long it lasted.
Mm-hmm.
What were your initial takeaways from Alistair Overeem continuing to keep this going? Man, this train is still rolling all these years later.
It is so incredible what he's been able to do. I mean, the man has over. You're getting feedback on my end? I'm hearing an echo.
No, I'm good.
Okay. Now it's okay. It's just crazy, man. Like what Overeem has been able to do over the years. I mean, he's got more than 60 pro fights. I mean, he was a K-1 champion. When he was about to fight Stipe Miocic for the title, people were talking about, well, if he wins the UFC heavyweight title, will he be considered the greatest heavyweight of all time? And that was a debate, and it was up for argument, and I don't know. I mean, you can go either way with it. But that was 3 years ago. And he's still winning fights. He's won 4 times since then. That is insane. And against Mark Hunt, against Fabricio Werdum, and against now Alexei Oleinik, who, don't sleep on him, by the way. You know, he's a veteran of the sport, and he's been very good in UFC lately too. I mean, at what point do you have to put him on that very, very elite list of heavyweights in MMA history? I mean, I think he's got to be on the short list, right? I mean, the longevity, career accomplishments, the one thing that he's missing really is the UFC heavyweight title.
And I will say the one thing that's been most impressive to me about his recent run is how damn realistic he is about all of this, right? Because exactly everything you just said is true, where this is the one thing left for him, and this is the one title accomplishment that he hasn't gotten. But yet when you ask him about it, he is so absurdly realistic about it, whereas I'm not even going to talk about needing or wanting or deserving this title until I get 3. He's said for the last 8 months, I need 3 wins and then I'm going to talk about it. And he still won't. You ask him today after the Alexei Linick win, and he'll still be, I need one more, and then I'll start talking about it. Man gets it, man. The man gets it, and it is really remarkable to see his evolution and just how he continues to change his game up and evolve alongside the sport. I mean, when he spoke to Luke Thomas on the MMA Hour a couple weeks ago, he talked about why switching gyms so much. Like, you don't has helped him throughout his career. Like, you don't see guys switch gyms nearly as much as Alistair Overeem has done throughout his career. It's kind of taboo in a way, still, even to some degree. Like, when TJ Dillashaw left Team Alpha Male, that type of thing. These things can become bigger deals than they should be. But Alistair Overeem is continually, anytime he gets into a rut, he goes to a different place and he meets different coaches. He works with different training partners and he evolves and changes just a little bit of his game. He tweaks a little bit and it works for him, man. It really works for him. And the way that he has always been able to introspectively sort of self-reflect and analyze what should I do to make this next step? Even if it maybe, you know, 9 out of 10 people wouldn't do that. That's been always most impressive to me.
100%. And I feel like Overeem has changed over the years, where maybe 6, 7, 8 years ago, he was kind of a surly guy and he was kind of known for that, like with the media, and he's evolved completely. And then now he's amicable and he's loquacious with the media. And it's cool to see that evolution. And, I mean, yeah, he's been everywhere as far as camps go. He's been to a number of camps, but he also has kept a lot of the same coaches with him from the Netherlands that he's worked with for a long time. So it's been like a nice mix. So he's had that consistency with that core group of people that he's always worked with, and now he's added other people like an Elliot Marshall in Colorado and so on, and a Greg Jackson in Albuquerque. Like, I mean, it has been very interesting to see his life as kind of an MMA nomad, where he's not really been affiliated with any, you know, one camp. And where would you put him on that all-time heavyweight list? He's got to be near the top, right?
Oh, I think he's easily a top five all-time heavyweight.
Oh yeah, easily top five.
Easily. I would have to sit and think about it, whether he falls into the top three. My immediate reaction when you say the top three would be some combination of Fedor, Daniel Cormier. Oh man, I mean, I guess Overeem, would you put Overeem ahead of Verdum?
Well, I mean, maybe. I mean,
he's up 2-1 in the series on him.
He is. Yeah, I mean, that's a toss up in my eyes. A question for you, because we were just talking about PEDs. Do you dock Overeem at all for his past positive tests? And also, do you dock Verdum? Because Verdum is sitting out 2 years.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. I mean, I would still say either Daniel or Fedor are the greatest heavyweight, probably. Then you could also Stipe's in that conversation. But
he has to be.
He has to be. But yeah, I would dock over him a little bit. But I still think he falls probably in that 3, 4, 5 range of greatest heavyweights of all time, even if he doesn't get this UFC title. Just because we've talked about this sort of with other guys, right, where it's this longevity. To me, longevity is the most incredible accomplishment you could have in MMA. If you're able to do this over 2 decades and continue to do it at a high level, evolve alongside the game, keep up with these young kids, that to me is more impressive than anything.
Who do you think he gets next? Because there aren't any real clear opponents for him, because he's fought almost everyone. Is it like someone like Derek Lewis? I mean, who would you want to see him fight next?
That was the question I was going to ask you, because if you look at where he's at right now, today he is sitting at number 6 on the rankings, and the rankings don't mean anything, but at least it's a good, helpful judge to look at. The FAA title is a bit of a mess right now, right? Because we don't know if we're going to get Daniel versus Brock Lesnar or Daniel versus Stipe. And so all of those guys are kind of just sitting out there. We don't know what's going to happen. Francis Ngannou versus JDS seems to be next. In my eyes, that should be a number one contender fight. Winner of that fight should get the fight, regardless of what is going on with Stipe at this point, just because Stipe hasn't done anything. He's been sitting out. But
Overeem versus Stipe?
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Does Overeem versus Stipe make sense? Because otherwise, you're just looking at Curtis Blaides, who is Overeem's training partner, and he just lost to him not that long ago. And then Derek Lewis, and those are the only people ranked ahead of him. So to me, Overeem Stipe would be kind of fun, and that would make a lot of sense. And that first fight was pretty wild. Both men almost won it.
Yeah, Overeem could have won that fight. he really could have won that fight. I don't know if that's what Stipe would want to do, because I think that if he doesn't get this shot coming up against Cormier, he may just wait it out again. Maybe. I don't know. It seems like he's got a one-track mind that he wants that Cormier rematch. And I don't know. Maybe it is him later this year. Maybe it's Brock Lesnar. I have no idea.
Stipe's been out for so long. It's so frustrating at this point to.
Yeah, he's been out for so long. But you're anti, you know, Lesnar. So I'm sure that you probably don't completely disagree.
Sure, I said a bunch that I thought Francis Ngannou deserved it. You go out and knock Cain Velasquez out in 20 seconds or whatever he did. Like, that's the most impressive victory anybody has.
Yeah, for sure. All right.
Let's keep it moving. Let's go back. Circle back to Matt the Donk, who we skipped over to get to this Overeem question. This is a little round of true or false. Always enjoy this. Let's get one last round of this. True or false, Mark Ramondi, John Fitch winning this weekend would be a promotional nightmare for Bellator.
I mean, a promotional nightmare?
Nightmare.
I guess in some ways true. I don't think it's really a promotional nightmare. Fitch is still someone that people want to watch. I know that he's not the most exciting fighter in the world, but that's not necessarily a barrier to being a draw. I mean, he talks a little bit. He's still well known, but I would say as far as like if you compare Rory McDonald to John Fitch, yeah, okay, true. It would not be a good thing for Bellator's drawing capabilities moving forward.
I would say false. And I would say false purely because of the structure that is leading into this fight, right? Because it's a tournament. And so even if he wins the title now, he still has two, at least minimum, more fights to go before if he emerges from the tournament as champion. And one of those fights is probably going to be against Douglas Lima, and that is a difficult fight.
And I guess, I mean, that would really make things interesting in that tournament. If John Fitch were to take the belt off Rory McDonald and then go in and to face Neiman Gracie and then have to fight Douglas Lima or MVP or someone else in the finals. Like, it would make things interesting for the tournament. Sure.
Yeah. And then you set up various rematches down the road against Rory. Like then you have a little more possibilities and room to play if you're Bellator. So I don't know. I say false to that one.
All right.
Alistair Overeem fights for a UFC title again before he retires. True or false?
You know what? I'm going to say true.
Same. Same.
I am. Yeah,
he just has a feeling about him, man. I don't know. I think it's going to take some careful matchmaking, because I think there's still a couple difficult fights for him in that division. But man, I think he's got a chance. He looked good. He looked really good.
He looked great. Yeah,
heavyweight.
You see what Brandon Gibson tweeted, coach from Jackson's, that Overeem's knees are the hardest strike that he has ever felt. Yeah. In coaching, which that says a lot, because he has
coming from Brandon Gibson.
Yeah, he's coached a lot of high-level fighters, a lot of high-level athletes in the sport.
It's crazy, man, that even at this point, Alistair Overeem's reaching the age of 40, and there are still no heavyweights like him with that clinch game. He has such a devastatingly effective clinch game that it's crazy that no one has really caught up to that.
Those knees are just heavy. Like, they're just so heavy. They're not sharp. They're not fast, necessarily, but they are heavy. It's like getting hit with, like, a freaking light pole. Like, it's just, God, I can't imagine how awful that must be.
It looks like it would pop your head off like a cork. Like, it's just.
It would kill me on impact. Me, it would kill like 100% to the body. Like, it would probably just like completely just break me in half.
that's what we should have arranged for your final show, is just one knee to the body from the Alistair Overeem.
I would be dead. I couldn't even move on and go to ESPN. I would literally be dead. I'm not even joking.
I was gonna say something, but I'll save it.
Wow.
True or false. Assuming John Jones stays at light heavyweight, he will win his next 4+ fights in a row. So 4+, meaning into 2020 basically.
Oof. I mean, that's a hard one, man. I 4 fights in a row. I mean, I have no idea who he's going to fight 2 fights from now.
Is it a hard one? Like, project down the line, right? You got Thiago Santos.
Yeah.
And then you got some level of a Dominic Reyes or a Johnny Walker. Johnny Walker or Luke Rockhold. Like, say those are the 4 fights. Are you choosing anybody but John to win those fights?
No, I mean, I'm not. So you're saying like Thiago Santos, Johnny Walker, Luke Rockhold, and then Dominic Reyes, someone like that. I mean, in that case, I would say true. I would say true. Yeah. I mean, I think that Jones would obviously be the favorite by a good deal in all of those fights.
Oh man, I'm telling Johnny Walker next time I see him that you turned on him.
I mean, I'm not turning on him. I'm just being realistic. I keep it real on this show. Whoever replaces me in this chair, not this actual chair, because this is, you know, sauna, but they better keep it real.
True or false, now is the right time to make Connor versus Nate 3.
I would say false.
I agree.
I would say false. I mean, I don't know what the right time is. Honestly, I think the right time is really any time at this point, because you just never know that. You don't even know if McGregor will fight again.
You don't know if either of these guys will fight again.
Yeah. So I would say this is not the right time to do it, but at this point, you probably just got to do it, right? You just have to make it happen, because you can't lose that. You cannot lose that trilogy. It has to happen at some point. I know that for a long time, it was kind of in the UFC's back pocket and they can go back to it whenever, but I hate to say it, but it feels like the window is closing a little bit. It's not almost closed, but I feel like it is in the process of closing. And I don't know how long those guys are going to want to fight. I don't know if Nate Diaz is going to want to fight that much more after the next couple of years. Like, it's got to get done at some point.
I would say false. This isn't the right time, but yeah. I mean, it may be the only time, because ideally the right time, right, would be each guy wins one. And then it kind of leads into like, oh yeah, remember these guys? They were really fun when they were in our lives. Let's do this again. And then that becomes bigger. I think if you just roll it out now, I don't know that it's as big as it could be, but at this point, this is like the only high profile matchup in the UFC that is a guaranteed pay-per-view blockbuster that has literally no implications on the title picture whatsoever, mm-hmm. which is extraordinarily weird to say. But say this fight happens, does that change the lightweight title picture even remotely? I don't think so.
No, not really. Although I guess it would make Nate Diaz a more credible. If Nate Diaz were to win, it would make him a more credible title contender than he would be right now.
Sure, but he would still be behind Dustin and probably Tony Ferguson.
He would be, but that doesn't mean the UFC still wouldn't go ahead with him in that fight.
Sure, true.
Whereas right now, as things stand, they probably wouldn't do it. But the whole thing with the UFC and Nate is that there's no level of trust.
That's an understatement. That is right? An understatement.
There's no level of trust that I don't know if the UFC would want to even put him in that position, because they may feel like, is this guy, and everyone knows that Nate is going to show up to the fight, right? But I think that he's also a guy that's going to use his leverage, whereas some other fighters don't do that as much. Nate is going to use every last ounce of leverage that he's got, and the UFC does not like playing those games.
As he should.
100%.
Last one from Matt the Donk. True or false, this weekend's Bellator card is significantly better than the UFC card?
No, I don't think it's significantly better, no. I mean, I wouldn't even say that it's better. I think they're both pretty solid. I like the Bellator card a lot. The UFC card is not the card that the UFC wanted. They wanted a bigger card in this spot. They wanted a main event with a little bit more cachet, but it didn't happen for various reasons. I think it's still a pretty good card top to bottom. And the Bellator card is good too. I mean, two title fights, Rory McDonald trying to come back from that tough loss to Musasi. I mean, I dig it.
I would say the UFC card is better, but only by a little bit. And I would say that because if I had to rank sort of my top five fights for this weekend that I'm looking at, I think the UFC would probably get three of them.
Yeah, I mean, you're probably talking about Alex Oliveira versus Mike Perry, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's my number one.
Yeah, 100%.
And then I have also in there in some order, Jacare, obviously, versus Hermanson. Yeah. That's interesting. Also, it's John Lineker fight week, baby. That's always worth celebrating.
Yeah, I mean, also, I'm one thing under the radar right now on this card to me is Ian Cutelaba against Glover Teixeira, because I really feel like Cutelaba has a chance to be a big star in the UFC. And he doesn't get a lot of attention because he's, you know, he's from Moldova, right? He's from Moldova. He doesn't really speak good English, although I know that he's trying to learn. But he's got a lot of charisma, and he's exciting as hell to watch. And he's got a good look. I mean, he's built like a brick S house. I mean, yeah, there's a lot to like. But if he can beat Teixeira, that's a really big deal. We could be talking about Kutalaba in that conversation with like the Dominic Reyeses of the world, guys come the Johnny Walkers of the world, if he beats Teixeira. In fact, I would even say if he beats Teixeira, he would be above those guys in my mind, because Teixeira is no joke. That guy is a stalwart in that light heavyweight division. He's a tough out.
Absolutely, even at this point in his career.
Yeah. I mean, at this moment, I would pick Teixeira to win that fight. Because, I mean, who has really beaten Teixeira except for the very, very, very best guys in the world? Corey Anderson, you know, beat him recently in a close fight. But he's lost to, like, Gustafson, Jones, Rumble. I mean, come on. That guy is a beast still.
Yeah. And to round out my top five fights that I'm looking for this weekend, I'd say the other two would be Rory Fitch and then Ben Henderson versus Adam Piccolotti. I will still ride or die with Ben Henderson. Yeah. So, but they're both good cards, man. They're both really good cards. It's going to be, I mean, not really good, but they're both very watchable, entertaining cards. So
100%. And the Lima Malay McFarland in the co-main event against Beta Arteaga, I mean, I think will be really fun. And I'm waiting for, you know, when does Alimile McFarland become a star? Like, when does she kind of cross over and kind of get into that conversation as one of Bellator's big stars? Because they've positioned her as such, and I think they've done a great job pushing her, but it seems like the fans have not 100% caught on yet, and the time is now. I mean, I think that she's a great ambassador for Bellator. She's charismatic. I mean, I can't say enough. You know, she's an exciting fighter. So it seems like she should have already been like a, you know, a Bellator regular, you know, main event player. But it has not quite happened yet.
I think for her, it's going to come down to having like a signature fight.
Yeah.
Like,
I thought Letourneau was going to be that. You know, I thought once she beat Valerie Letourneau, who we have seen in wars with like Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and McFarlane went out and finished Letourneau. She finished. Yeah. She beat her up. I mean, that was a vicious finish. I thought that was the thing that was gonna make her, you know, a bigger star. I think maybe the division is a little bit shallow and there's not a lot of compelling other opponents for her right now.
That's the thing, is I feel like for her it's gonna take like a signature rival or like a signature fight. I thought it would be Letourneau too, but I think we also maybe overestimated how well known Letourneau really is.
I
think it's going to take one of the, like, a real foil for her, like a real rival for her to like break through to some level of the mainstream.
Possibly.
All right, let's keep it moving. Next one's coming from Philosophical Perspective, who says, final show for Mark. Hey boys, I hope I read something totally wrong. Final show for Mark, ? Please explain. And what does that do to my Wednesdays? You two are such a great tag team. Well, all things come to an end. He really reached all seven stages of grief, like very quickly through the course of those, like, multiple sentences. Acceptance at the end. Yeah, we will talk about, as I said, we'll talk about the future of this show later on. It will continue to keep going. But a question. Do you insiders know why Faraz Sahabi went on his rant against John Fitch in the Robin Black interview for DAZN, I might add? I thought that was a weird bit of, this is me, not this guy, but I thought that was a weird bit of a weird way to hype a fight that you're broadcasting. Is like, hey, one of the people in the main event popped for steroids. Let's release a 2-minute video about that. That's pretty, it's a strange way to promote your own fight. But
I like transparency.
Yeah. But Philosophical Perspective says, I saw Sean wrote about this, but I am interested in your takes. It is so unlike Faraz. He really went after Fitch. I agree, it is unusual to see a welterweight fighter over 40 competing at the highest level, especially after 17 years as a pro. Fitch made his UFC debut in 2005 and has been facing top-level competition ever since starting. He has made a rare positive turn since his bad stretch a few years ago. But another fighter, Diego S., has also found a positive turn lately. So does Faraz know things that we do not, or did he just go a little crazy? If it is only accusations and speculations, it seems unprofessional from such a high-level coach to go that hard, and also very, very unlike a respected high-class act like Faraz. What is your take? So this is this was an interesting one, man. On a lot of different fronts, I thought John Fitch handled it excellently on the MMA hour. I mean, he really went into why he used PEDs, testosterone to be specific, a couple years ago in that fight against Usmal Pajares for the WSOF title. He was very transparent about it, very honest about it. I think he actually kind of like made some people come around to see his side by being that honest. And that maybe is a path that more fighters should take. We've seen guys like Chael do that. But also, I have to note that this isn't an isolated thing, right? I feel like Vahran Sahabi and the people at TriStar, George St. Pierre, all these guys, they're very mild-mannered and they're very nice, but they do not take one. They take one thing very, very seriously, and that is PEDs. We've seen George say this before, make these kind of accusations about people, and Faraz as well now. I think this is maybe the one thing that they really, really feel so strongly about that they're willing to sort of break their societal norms with being otherwise mild-mannered, very nice people.
100%. And I wonder if those feelings that Faraz has go all the way back to when GSP fought Fitch a long, long time ago, many, many years ago. I wonder if that's what they suspected back then too. And then it came out that he was on it for that one fight against Pajares and WSOF. I think what you said was right on about Fitch and about being honest about it. And that is a breath of fresh air because we get mostly denials. And sometimes the denials are completely correct and accurate and they're being honest. But it is refreshing to see a fighter own up to it, explain why they did it, apologize. The same way, I mean, in a similar way that TJ Dillashaw did, although he hasn't completely kind of explained himself yet, and maybe he will. He has 2 years to figure that out. Like you said, with Chael Sonnen, like no one even cares. No one even cares that Chael Sonnen was on stuff. You know, no one cares.
The guy has like five jobs now.
Yeah, I mean, he's my new colleague at ESPN. No one cares. And I think the thing about Chael is that he's always been honest. Like he never said otherwise, you know, about PEDs. So he's been consistent. You have to give him that. But it was a little bit, it was a little bit surprising to see Faraz take it to that level because he's not usually that guy, right? He's not controversial. I mean, he's a very, not a lot of ups and downs. He's a very kind of straightforward, straight shooter. But that like you said, that's kind of how they feel at TriStar. They're very adamant against PEDs.
Yeah, I honestly can't think of, at least off the top of my head, another instance of him even really firing shots at anybody.
Not really. I mean, not at that level. I can't remember anything where he really, really like went against an opponent of one of his fighters like that. No, I really can't recall.
Yeah. And one last thing on this before we move on. You had said, you know, John, we were talking about John Fitch and you said TJ Dillashaw somewhat took the same route. I'm almost of the mind that the way John Fitch handled this to me really feels like the best way to handle this. Just being completely upfront, completely honest, completely transparent. I feel like TJ Dillashaw should have, I agree with our colleague Jed Meshew here, who had a good point that TJ Dillashaw, rather than do what he did, I feel like he did the worst way to handle it. I feel like you either stay silent and let it blow over, because it will blow over, because everything blows over in this day and age. In 2 months from now, no one would even care or remember. Or you go scorched earth on this MF-er and just throw everybody on the bus, be like, yeah, I did that. Here's why. Here's everybody that knew that I was doing that. And all of you guys were doing it too. And just go and name names. Just go full scorched earth on this, because why not, right? It's all entertainment. Who cares?
No, come on. Jed would say that though. That is definitely a Jed thing to say. No, I think he handled it fine. I think that again, it's still early on in the process. I think at least he owned up to it, and then maybe he'll talk more about why he did it and that sort of thing later on. I thought what he did was fine. I think
he should have at least gotten better audio. It was impossible to hear what he was saying.
He should have gotten better audio. but I mean, I appreciate that he did own up to it and basically say that he did it, that, you know, he was guilty and he made a mistake. So can't really ask for anything more at this juncture. I think he earned some respect, at least from people. Again, I think he
did he though? Because to me, I mean, we're completely off tangent at this point, but it felt to me that he was more sorry that he got caught than anything else. I don't know that he earned a ton of respect for that. I appreciate him speaking about it, but I don't know that the content of his message really changed anybody's mind.
Yeah, maybe not everyone. I mean, certainly not everyone. But I think, in my mind, I thought he did a solid by doing that, where he could have denied it. He could have said it was, you know, he didn't know what he was taking or something like that. I mean, there are things that you could say that people, you know, may believe, like your fans, you know, would believe. And he could have taken that easy route, but he took the hard one and he owned up to it. So I respect that. I'm not saying that completely absolves him from doing what he did, because this was a bad one. This was a pretty bad one. I respect that he did that he owned up to it.
There's Mark Remondi again.
What is that smirk on your face?
Mark Remondi, the old PED defender.
Oh yeah, okay.
Sure. I'm just messing with you. Next one's coming from Rob Holland, who wants to know about our good friend El Kakui. What is next for El Kakui? Let's say that we see him fight late this summer, he writes. Who will Tony Ferguson face if the Diamond fights the Eagle? My money is on Justin Gaethje, a fight even the MMA gods pray to themselves to make, and it is the best way to go when it may take until the end of 2019 when we see the lightweight division title defended. And somehow that was a question. Personally, I would hate to see either man lose, just like Dustin and Max. So yes, Mark, you worked a little on this story this week. Tony Ferguson appears now. I mean, we haven't heard from the man other than just random social media postings, but it appears as though he is ready to return. His wife's restraining order was not re-upped effectively. Correct me if I'm wrong.
She dropped the case. So the story basically was that she requested a restraining order, a temporary restraining order against Tony. And the hearing, you can request it, and then when you request it, basically that sets in motion, you know, court proceedings, and it also it's like when you're provisionally suspended by USADA, kind of. It's like you are suspended pending this investigation and hearing. So he had to keep away from her and their 2-year-old son until the hearing, and the hearing was set for April 5th, and it didn't happen. She dropped the case. There's no more hearing. There's no more case. It's done for now. There's no restraining order. He is free to see his child. He is free to see her whenever he wants. So that's great news. I mean, that's really great news. And I hope, and she was upfront. I mean, Christina Ferguson was upfront when this came out in her statement to the media that she was not doing this because Tony Ferguson was a bad guy, a bad husband, a bad father. She was doing this because she thought that he needed to seek some help, some, I guess, psychological help. And that's why she was trying to force the issue, because she felt like she needed to do that from a legal and I guess on record way, rather than just, because I guess she tried to do it the old fashioned way by trying to convince him to do it. And there were instances where he was going to do it, but then he backed out. So she tried to do it that way to kind of force him into it. And I guess, and we have to presume that maybe this is happening. And he wrote on social media a few weeks ago that the UFC and his management company, Paradigm, is helping him get the help that he needs, which I think is great news. And look, again, he's not a bad guy. He never, you know, he was never really, he never hit her, you know, stuff like that. Like, this is a very different case than other cases that we've seen in other sports and in MMA as well. It was something where he was, I guess, going through a tough time, and hopefully he's getting help and he's on the other side of it. And there's nothing more than we'd like to see. I think I can speak for you too, Sean, is to see a healthy, rejuvenated Tony Ferguson, who's in a good place, back in the octagon. I think that's what everyone wants. And I really hope this is the start of good news. And I hope it's the start of El Kakui being back in the cage in 2019.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I could not echo everything that you said more. I think I know that I am on record at being basically the biggest El Kakui mark in the MMA media. I think he's still the best lightweight in the world. And it would be nice to have him back. He would come back in a situation that would be very disadvantageous. Obviously, he's no longer next in line. I think even I can admit that. Dustin Poirier definitely jumped him with what we saw last month, or I guess a couple weeks ago. So it's good. But it would just be nice to have him back in the mix, because he does feel like that obvious next man in line. He may have to fight once more at this point, but it's just fun to have Tony Ferguson around. And obviously I want to hear from him, man. I want to know if that he's okay. I want to know sort of what he went through and sort of where's his head is at this point. Cause I would imagine this has been such a frustrating road for him over the last several months, man. He's only fought twice in the last more or less 2.5 years, both times in October. And it's basically once a year for the past 2 years. Like he's nearing the age of 40, right? He's 35. He's taken a lot of damage in his career. I just don't want us to miss this window where we could have had Tony Ferguson against a Khabib Nurmagomedov or a Dustin Poirier and just had some of these legendary fights play out. So I love the Justin Gaethje fight, man. I love the Justin Gaethje fight. If Tony Ferguson comes back, he probably needs to fight one more time just because of the backlog in the division right now. I love the Justin Gaethje fight. That is madness. That is utter madness. Both of those men are psychos in the best possible way. And that pretty much seems like that would be a number one contender fight.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It would have to be. I mean, for whatever that's worth these days in the UFC. A couple more things about Tony. Some of those things that she had claimed in the court filing were very disturbing and very concerning. And again, we hope that... I don't know if that's something that you can, I don't know if that kind of thing, I don't know what it is. You know, I'm not a doctor. I don't know anything about this stuff, but I hope that whatever it is a solvable problem for him moving forward and he can kind of get back and not just get back in the cage, live a great life, you know, and you know, not enjoy his family and his son and everything. That's really the most important thing. Not getting into a cage and fighting someone. I'm sure that's also very important to him, but the most important thing is that he lives a full life and has a great time with his family. Most important thing. And also one last thing on this, she wrote in the court filing that he took a turn for the worse as far as his mental health goes when he got hurt in April 2018, when he was supposed to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov for the title on that card, UFC 223. That's really when it really got bad for him. And I just want to say to that, it's like, you know, when you see fans crap on fighters on social media and you see like all the venom and the hate and the bile, I mean, it keep in mind stuff like this. Like these are people. These are people who have families.
Well done.
Who have real lives outside the cage who are going through some shit. And especially with something like that, like you think he wanted that? That's like the worst thing that could have happened to him. And had people were laughing at him and people were, you know, crapping on him for that. And this happens in MMA on a regular basis where someone is kind of in the barrel, you know, for that week or so. Keep in mind, these are real people who have real life problems, who have families, and they're going through some stuff. So try to keep that in mind before you hit that send button on Twitter where you're crapping on someone.
Well said. Well said. I think that's falling on deaf ears to the people who are going to hit that send button, but well said anyway.
Let's move on. ESTD wants us to do a shoey, Sean.
He didn't say us. Read the question.
Oh. Please, Mark, please do a shoey before you leave.
Yes. Let's do it.
I don't think I'll be doing
it. If you notice, I'm wearing the shirt that I was wearing in the infamous shoey video. It only felt fitting. Mark, I'm waiting your shoey.
I'm probably not going to do a shoey. I'm probably not going to do it. There needs to be... Look.
Just going to disappoint us one last time.
that was a fun video. I will cherish that one quite a bit, but
dare I say the greatest single piece of content that our award-winning video producer Casey Layden has ever made.
It was really damn good. The music was beautiful. But no shoey, but again, like everything else, I will say no shoey right now, but sometime in the future. You never know. You never know. Let's keep that on the back burner. Maybe sometime later on.
There will be a shoey reunion at one point or another.
Never know. You gotta do one too.
Next, I'll do one next time. Next question is coming from Rob Holland. Says, please tell me Mark is gonna work as Anderson Silva's PR manager. He already does. He's just kind of taking on more responsibilities. Sean, who will replace the magnificent Marcus Ramondius? And Mark, please tell me the GOAT has hired for his PR. Also, Sean, please share your most memorable Mark moment. A-side without Mark, pros, no more endless Anderson Silva GOAT debates. Cons, no more Anderson Silva.
That's good stuff, Rob Holland.
Well done, Rob.
I don't even think there's a question in there, but yeah, who's replacing me, Sean?
Yeah, I guess we're kind of winding down the serious questions at this point, so might as well talk about it.
I want to know myself. I'm curious.
We do not. You are much too valuable to the team. No one man can replace the imposing shadow that you cast over this program.
Imposing shadow.
So I don't know. We're gonna try some things out over the next couple of weeks. We're gonna have some fun. We have a very big team here at MMA Fighting. I don't know exactly how many staffers we have, but I think it's somewhere around 15 to 18.
There's not that many. Are you crazy?
I think you're wrong. We got a lot.
Like 13, I think. Right.
We have 13, but we're also about to make a few hires.
Oh, a few hires, really? Please.
We have 13. Please. We're about to make a few hires. I put it out on Twitter yesterday. If you guys are interested in working for MMA Fighting, email me. I put my email address out on Twitter yesterday. I've gotten over like 200 emails from that, so maybe that was a bad idea. But hey, whatever. But we are gonna switch things up. We're gonna. What's that?
Who's MMA Fighting hiring?
Oh, you don't care. It doesn't matter.
I do. I'm asking you. The fans. No.
It doesn't involve you. You know.
I have a question for you. I know I'm putting you on the spot here. What was the absolute worst email that you got from someone asking for a job? Like, what was just like a horrendous email?
Oh, I would never do that. These people are.
No, I'm not saying name and name. I'm not saying name and name.
I would just say that there were
private.
At least 50% of the emails I got were very low effort. Two sentences just be like, hey, here's me. You've never heard of me. Hire me. And a billion spelling errors throughout it. And it's just like, all right, you're probably not in consideration for this job, sir.
Do you want to be an effing MMA writer? Come on. Step your games up.
But yes, replacement. So what we're probably going to do for the next few weeks, probably next month or two, I would imagine. We got a great team. So we're just going to kind of give people shots. We're going to try a few different people out, see if anything clicks. Chuck Mindenhall, Jed Meshew, AK Lee, Jose Youngs, maybe some new faces as well. We're kind of shuttle some people in, shuttle some people out. Danny Segura, who knows who could show up. It'll be fun. We'll try out different mixes and see, give everyone some airtime and see what works.
How about E. Casey Lydon?
Oh my God. The internet is not ready for his hot takes.
They're too hot off the internet. They are scalding.
You guys don't realize this, but our award-winning cameraman, Casey Lydon, has the most scorching hot takes in the history of this sport. Me and you both have probably gotten in so many different arguments with that guy about just stuff that he will fight to the death about.
We would all get third-degree burns from Casey's hot takes.
But yeah, man, hey, if this is also your guys' show, so if there's people you want to see more often on the show, if there's somebody that you like, if there's somebody you want me to go and get, Brian Boom Kelleher is out there making a lot of noise, trying to get on the show, etc. Let me know and I will do my best to appease you guys. We're going to try to have some fun and mix things up and yeah, it'll be fun. Try some things out.
Should we move on to our next question? I want to know this answer too from Brian Billings.
Oh, wait, one second. Also, Sean, please share your most memorable Mark moment.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's let me see. So we've known each other. We knew each other vaguely, but we met 5 years ago at Hendrix Lawler One.
Dallas.
In Dallas. And since then we've had a lot of time on the road. So I don't think my most memorable Mark moment I can say in a public sphere.
You only ever had wholesome times on the road, Sean.
I think my top 10 Mark moments I probably can't say in a public sphere. So
come on, stop.
Your boy's a bit of a wild man, is all I'm saying. Let's see. Most memorable Mark moment. I mean, it's gotta be the Shoey, dude. It's gotta be the Shoey. Me and you, because that was our first event where we really like had that was the first event post Ariel leaving.
That was before there was an A-side, by the way.
Yeah, that was before the A-side, before all that. That was the international fight week right after Ariel left, and all of us were kind of getting thrust into positions where we were way out of our comfort zone doing things that I think neither me nor you ever really thought we would be doing for MMA Fighting. And that was – the bet was your idea. It was in the middle of the weigh-in stream, our first live weigh-in stream. I will never forget watching that fight alongside you on press row and watching your excitement and giddiness over Ngannou, Derek Lewis, slowly melt away over five increasingly perplexing minutes as I am sitting next to you, joyously giggling and trying not to curse myself, trying not to jinx myself, but knowing from the first like 90 seconds onward, like, oh Jesus, I have this in the bag. These dudes are not going to do anything. This is going to be fantastic. And the whole arena booing, everyone around us being like, what is going on? And me being the one person in this entire arena of 25,000 people who is just enjoying the hell out of himself.
By the way, we never sit like near each other at events. Like when we have credentials on press row, we're never sitting next to each other. It's really weird. That was the one time we were actually sitting next to each other on press row.
That's a great point. That's genuinely the only time we've ever had seats right next to each other.
Yeah.
Watching your bemusement turn slowly into horror as this happens real time in front of you like a car crash was maybe one of the greatest moments of my professional life. Because when we made this bet, the whole time I was on team, I want to do a shoey. Like, I was into the idea, if I lost, I'll do the shoey. You were so anti-shoey. You were so dug in so deep that you did not want to do this. It was magical. It was magical.
Nasty. Can we move on?
Also, I still have the shoe that happened, and it still vaguely smells like beer.
You should put the shoe like up on your thing, like on your
behind me.
Yeah, up on your shelf. That's an MMA lore right there.
Well, if you were staying on the show, that would have been a good idea, but you're leaving, so we got to wipe away any memory of Mark Raimondi, you know?
You have something to remember me by on there. Want to put up like can you get your boy to draw a photo, a portrait of me?
you want to stylize the artwork of Mark Raimondi?
You can just put my face right over Jose Aldo's. Oh,
that would be great. Mid-shoeies, beer spilling all over you. It's good.
Christ.
All right, next one. Go for it.
Brian Billings is asking about the Alshadis versus the Marriott. Sean, what's the latest on your wife's battle against Marriott? From your story, it sounded like you minimally deserved a refund. Any chance you got some money back, maybe a free employee room couch for your next stay? For those who are not updated on this story, at UFC 236, Sean arrived in Atlanta without a room at the hotel, and they did nothing for him. And the poor guy had to sleep in the employee break room that night before going to, I believe, open workouts the next day. And Marriott has not done anything for you since then, right?
I had to pay to sleep in that employee break room.
You paid that night? What?
No, I've been a little busy over this past week. It has been a little bit of a chaotic week. So I have not had a chance to follow up yet. My wife has not had a chance either. But it is on the radar. And you know what's funny is actually over the weekend, Marriott sent me, you know how these businesses will send out the survey after the fact of like, hey, how was your stay?
Right.
Marriott sent me one of those. And it's just like, wow. All right, guys, you want to hear about my stay? Let me tell you a little bit about my stay. And I think I probably wrote an 800 word piece about my stay and sent it to them. And then it was very convenient.
Yeah, Shane Luca to write your thing for you.
There you go. And it was very convenient that we have reached out to this general manager that I talked to once, and then she ducked me for the rest of my stay. And within 30 minutes of me sending in that survey, lo and behold, who hit me up? Yep, that general manager.
How about that?
Oh, my God.
What is that?
My dog just, like, almost broke something trying to eat a fly. That was wild. But yeah, no progress yet on the Marriott front. I have not gotten back to that. I will as soon as things slow down over here. It's been a little bit of a crazy week.
It's a ridiculous story.
All right. Next one coming from ThunderKiss65. This is just mean. Favorite Mark moments go. And his is Mark and his 400-pound sumo fighter, in quotes, girlfriend in Japan. Your girlfriend is very nice. I have met her several times. Her name is G, and she is not 400 pounds.
What?
And that is not very nice. But she is a sumo fighter, and she would probably mess all of you up. Like, I don't know if she's a I think she's a purple belt, maybe.
Yes.
She's like a fearsome purple belt. Like, I have seen her
Ty Mark Ramadi and Knotts in front of me just to do it a little bit. So I wouldn't, if you're going to take shots at him, that's one thing. But if you're going to take shots at his girlfriend, I would rue the day. I would be scared for you. You do not want to do that.
True story. True story. I have no favorite Mark moments, personally.
What is your favorite Mark Ramadi moment on this show?
Me?
Yeah.
I don't have a favorite moment of my own. That's not how this works.
I don't know if I have a specific one, but I would say the rants against the fans are always my favorite. When you get a little fired up, when you get a little fire in your belly and you get somebody calling you clickbait or something, that's when you unleash the true Marundi.
Yeah, all right. I'll go along with that. I did enjoy my promo on Phoenix. that was enjoyable.
Oh, on the fans. That's right. The terrible Phoenix fans. All right, let's keep it moving. I feel like it's just gonna be silly stuff from here, but why not? Probably, right?
That's okay.
Yeah, why not? Gonna miss Mark, and this one's coming from Duncan Hills. What's one thing you really wish you had time to talk about before on the show and never got to? Maybe a promo you never got to do. Also, is there anything you don't want to leave unsaid for us fans?
Well, I'm gonna finish off with my promo, and that's gonna be about a little bit of that. But no, enough. I mean, there's nothing that I haven't held anything back. I mean, I've said everything that I've wanted to say. I mean, I can't think of anything that I haven't said that I want to say. It looks like you're about to say something. What is on your mind, Sean?
I mean, if it was up to you, this would be a show that would basically be 60 minutes of MMA and then 60 minutes of pro wrestling. So I think I've held you back on a lot of the pro wrestling conversation.
I mean, I get it. Look, I'm a fan of pro wrestling. I know that some of our loyal followers and listeners and viewers are pro wrestling fans, but also a lot of them are not. And I get it. I know I have to kind of walk that line a little bit. I don't want to go too far on the other side, but no, that's fine. I think I've said my piece enough about that topic.
All right, let's keep it moving. Next one's coming from Trumbo. Says Bellator versus UFC this weekend. Bellator main card this weekend is pretty darn good. UFC card is meh, except Perry versus Oliveira, which is fire. Which card will be on the big screen at your house, and which will be on the small screen? Oh, I like the way that is phrased. Yeah. That's an interesting way to look at it. All right, what do you think?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, if I'm being honest. Well, I'm on Saturday. I'm off. I'm done with MMA fighting on Friday, and I start ESPN on Monday. So technically, I'm unemployed on Saturday. So I don't know what my plans will be on my day off, which I don't get many Saturdays off. I don't know. Maybe I won't watch MMA at all. Sure. Of course I will. What are you, crazy? I don't know. I don't know. Probably picture in picture, MRFers. Picture in picture.
You know what's funny is I'll actually have Saturday off too.
You have Saturday off?
Yeah, for once. It's one of my really good buddies' 30th birthday, so I'm doing something with him.
All right.
But if I was watching live, I think, I'm not going to lie, I would probably have Bellator on the big screen.
Oh, all right.
At least main cards. I would switch that. At the moment Mike Perry versus Oliveira comes up, I'm switching these screens, but I like the Bellator card, man.
I think switching is the right answer for sure. You get to pick and choose which fights.
Yeah. All right. Let's move over on to Twitter.
Yes, let's do that. There's not a whole lot.
Actually, there is quite a bit.
Okay, there is a whole lot. Sorry.
All right, let's go. I got one right now.
Yeah.
Okay, this is great. This is coming from Leo/Lando, who says, Mark, congratulations on the new gig. Always have been a big fan of your work, and I'm happy to see it pay off for you. Sean, question, can you rank from biggest to least despicable snake? TJ Dillashaw, Kevin Durant, and Anaconda, and Mark Ramondi? Long live the A side, and for some reason he put asterisks in your name.
That was cute because he doesn't want me to vanity search for my own name, even though I'm tagged in the question.
Is that what that is? That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, that's what people do. Like, if you want to tweet about someone and you don't want them to search for their name and see your tweet, you put like a little asterisk. I've seen that. I've never in my life done that, but I've seen people do that.
Have you ever vanity searched for your own name on Twitter?
No. I don't think so.
I don't think I have either. Like, I look at my mentions, but like,
yeah,
typing Sean Alshadi and seeing what somebody's talking about, that seems weird. I don't need to see that.
I don't care. Like, I don't think anyone's really tweeting about me. Like,
also, and if they are, it's not anything good, right?
Probably not. So yeah, no, I'm good.
Like, no one's just going on their Twitter feed being like, you know who I really like? That Mark Raimondi, and not maybe, tagging you about it.
Maybe they are.
I feel like those people would tag you. But let's see. Rank from biggest to least despicable snake. Oh, my goodness. I mean, Kevin Durant is the biggest snake on this whole list easily, by far. It's not even close. Come on. I could go on a 10-minute Kevin Durant rant if I want, but I'm not going to. But, like, just – yeah, you're gonna lose 3-1 when you're down 3-1 in a series and then join the best team in the history of basketball. Hey, great job. Congrats. I really think – you really earned those finals MVPs. Good job. Those rings really mean a lot, man. And I will take all of this back if Kevin Durant signs with the Suns. Please sign with the Suns. Save us. Oh, my God. An Anaconda is second.
Then you're really doing this.
Then I would put TJ Dillashaw. And then Mr. Mark Raimondi, he last. He is the lead. He is not a despicable snake whatsoever. He is a very fine, upstanding young gentleman. A gentleman and a scholar.
I don't know about young, but sure.
That's true. That's true. You're older than me.
I'm significantly older than you.
I don't know about significantly. Let's not get too crazy.
How old are you?
I turned 30 in a couple months.
Whoa, big 3-0. What are we doing?
Because of you, I'm going to be on the road for my 30th birthday. I wasn't supposed to be, but now I'm going to be.
Where?
Chicago.
We got a party.
Yeah, we definitely do, because turning 30 on the road seems very depressing.
Chicago's a great city.
Turning 30 all alone on the road seems like the most depressing.
You're not going to be alone. You're going to be with your friends. We'll go out.
There you go.
If you guys still want me, you know, around, maybe you don't want to hang out with me. I don't know. That's okay too. That's okay. I get it.
I'm trying not to be overboard. I had something queued up, but I didn't want to. All right. What do you got? One?
Yes. From Diddy Bop. Will we ever see Frankie Edgar give 135 a go? If so, what would your dream matchups be for Frankie at 135, and how good would he be at that weight, considering he's always been undersized his entire career at 45 and 55?
I think the longer we go, the less likely it is for him.
Yeah, I agree.
He's not going to do that until he gets his last shot at 45, and who knows when that's going to be at this point. I feel like he still earns it right now, but Volkanovski could take him over if he defeats Jose Aldo. But I mean, you never know. I always feel like Frankie Edgar has like that one last chapter in him where, say, things go wrong at 45 and he's nearing the end of his career and maybe has one or two fights left. He might do like a little last second venture detour down to 35 to try to get one last title.
Right. Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, he doesn't need to do it. I know that people have been calling for this for a very long time. I think that the secret to Frankie Edgar over the years has been, yeah, he's been undersized, but he also doesn't go through with those ridiculous weight cuts where he's depleting his body and he's coming into the fight a shell of his normal self. And I don't even think like the weight cut would be to 135 would be like that bad on him. I think he walks around to probably like 155 or around there, so like which is honestly probably about the same size as a lot of 35ers now. I think Dominic Cruz is bigger than Frankie Edgar, you know. That's been one of the secrets of his success, is that he is durable and he's able to outwork a lot of these guys because he's not cutting a stupid amount of weight. So I don't see it to be necessary, although I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing just to see what he would look like at that weight, to see if he'd have a lot of success. And I think he would. I think he would, but he's still doing great at 45.
Yeah. Let's get one coming here from Maze Flare Sword, who says, totally flying under the radar, but your boy Greg Hardy is the co-main for this weekend's fights. Would you say that that's the UFC pushing because his name is attached to a popular sport, or his management is that good? So yeah, I was a little surprised by this too, but I guess only as surprised as you can really be in this sport. I mean, this is pretty typical. Greg Hardy goes out, loses his UFC debut, and nonetheless is the co-main event for UFC Fort Lauderdale this weekend. What do you make of it, Mark?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's got anything to do with his management being good. I think his management is very good.
His management is very good.
They're very good. I mean, the Kahlo brothers are you know, two of the best in the business. But I don't think that's why he's in the co-main event. I think he's in the co-main because I don't think he's necessarily making more money to be in the co-main event. I think he's probably making the same as he would if he were, you know, in like the opener of the main card or something like that.
Oh yeah, no, purses don't work like that.
So I don't think it's necessarily that. I think it's really just more that the UFC sees a situation where this is a guy that has a crossover appeal. He has a name that is familiar to people who are not just MMA fans, who are, you know, NFL fans. This is also, don't forget, this is ESPN. It's on ESPN. People who watch ESPN know who Greg Hardy is because of his time in the NFL, you know, warts and all. And also, unfortunately, the bad stuff, you know, the domestic violence accusations and the investigations by the NFL have unfortunately made him someone that people know even more. So there's that controversy too. And unfortunately, we're in a world of controversy where the UFC is going to use people throwing dollies through buses in promo videos to hype a fight. And this is something I feel, obviously domestic violence is far worse than throwing a dolly through a bus, but this is where we're at. Controversy sells and he's a familiar name and he's a better known name than everyone else on the card. I mean, outside of like a Jacare, right? So I think that's really where that comes from. I'm not saying I agree with it or I don't agree with it. I'm saying that's just what it is.
No, I mean, that's exactly where it comes from, right? Like, because I always use this as an example. But anecdotally, I have not heard from any of my friends about any fights recently. And my friends are very, 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 very casual MMA fans. They will only pay attention to the biggest fights. And I have not heard from anybody about fights recently at all, other than this week when I have had a few people hit me up and be like, hey, is Greg Hardy fighting this week? And I think that's it. That right there is why he's in the co-main event, because like you said, the ESPN audience knows who Greg Hardy is. So it doesn't matter what we think. They're going to keep doing this, I imagine, unless he just loses, you know, a bunch in a row.
Yeah, I mean, unless fans who actually do care about that kind of thing don't watch and they are active and vocal. But to be honest, I think there is a segment of the population that really hates that. And again, I'm cool with those feelings, and I don't love it either. But I think most MMA fans really are just fine with it, you know, for better or for worse.
Yeah. All right. Next one's coming from Harry A. All right. It's Harry like hair. That's good. All right. Will the winner of the main event in Florida be the backup fighter for Adesanya versus Whitaker? That's an interesting question. Which fight would you have as a back, or which fighter would you have as a backup? He also adds, way to sell out Mark Ramondi. Just kidding. Congrats. We'll see you from behind the wall. We'll see you behind the wall. Maybe not from Brazil. I don't get that part.
No idea what that means.
I don't understand the end there, but which fight should be the backup fighter for Adesanya versus Whitaker? Should it be this one?
That's a tough one, man. I don't know. I mean, it really...
Is it a tough one? Because it comes down probably between this or Yoel Romero versus Paulo Costa if that gets done.
Well, I mean, the thing is like he's asking, I don't know if they'll do a backup fighter as much as they may do like a backup fight, like another middleweight fight on that card. You know what I mean?
I think where he's coming from is like if, say, Robert Whittaker falls out again, who would Izzy fight at that point?
Vice versa. Yeah, I mean, I think it's either Jacare or Hermanson or Costa Romero, I guess. I mean, who else would it be? It's one of those four guys. But then you're in a situation, you know, if Yoel Romero wins, he hasn't made weight in his last two fights. You know, do you really risk him, you know, putting him in that position? I don't know.
To me, this is simple. It's Jacare if Jacare wins, because he's been screwed around so much with this title shot. He's earned it four different times, and he deserves it at this point. If Hermanson wins, though, and then if Paulo Costa wins, to me, a win over Yoel Romero is the most impressive thing you can get in this division. He's the number one contender. So to me, it would depend on the outcomes.
Yeah. No, I agree. I definitely, I'm with you on that one. It would be nice for Jacare to get that shot before he hangs it up.
Also, I don't know if we could towel you down enough for Paulo Costa versus Yoel Romero if that gets going.
And apparently it might. Apparently it might happen.
Yeah.
I don't know where it'll be, but I will be there.
What you got next?
We talked a little bit about this, but from Harry A as well is Alex Cowboy versus Mike Perry flying under the radar this weekend. It has Fight of the Night written all over it. Will Perry be able to handle Oliveira on the ground? Who you got? Congrats on the new gig, Mark Raymondi. That's me.
That is you. I actually think this fight is flying under the radar a little bit, right? It's Wednesday and we haven't heard a single thing from Mike Perry yet, which is surprising.
Yeah.
Our own Guillermo Cruz talked to Alex Oliveira. Our own Mike Schiappetta is talking to Mike Perry probably actually within the next hour or so. So we'll have some stuff from MMA Fighting on that, or on MMA Fighting from that. But to me, this is flying under the radar. This, to me, is the best fight of the weekend just from a pure entertainment standpoint. I am looking forward to it.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be fantastic because those guys are unpredictable. I mean, you just have no idea what will happen when they get in the cage. It should be a complete war. It'll be nuts. It's probably the fight that I'm most looking forward to, just as far as like in cage fights go.
What? Sorry, I'm looking at other questions and one of these just made me laugh. You got anything?
Not really.
I'll go then. I got one from Cult Shaw, who says, "Hi guys. If you both would fight each other in an octagon, how do you think the fight would go? TKO, what? Submission, and most important, who would win? Mark and Shaheen, you are the real deal, all caps. Everything else is hashtag the A side." And then he put a picture of Proper 12 with the proper crossed out, and he wrote, "Bullshit, no." So I'm not really sure.
Where is this?
I'm not sure where that was going and what the punchline was there, but we appreciate the compliment, certainly.
Where are you even seeing this?
Really? I don't know. It's on the A-side feed.
Who asked the question?
Cult Shull?
I wonder if I blocked him.
Who knows? So a fight between us. The fight would end with us hugging in the center of the octagon and agreeing that this is silly. Why are we doing this? Let's go get a drink.
Also, we're not in the same weight class. That's ridiculous.
I mean, you could balloon up to like middleweight. Oh, that got you.
I could technically. I'm on my way.
Have you ever approached the middleweight limit?
No, not even close. I've never approached the welterweight limit.
What's like you at your peak? You're like out of control.
Out of control are two different things.
Like peak as in like you just let yourself get way too much. You got to walk this back.
Well, I would say that in terms of like being overweight.
Yeah.
Like 157. 157 is probably like the worst, but I weigh more than that now. But I'm not, I mean, I'm a little overweight, but I also have a lot more muscle than I did when I was 157 a few years ago. So I'm actually lifting and stuff now. So I'm more than that now. But I'm not just a disgusting mess like I was like maybe, I don't know, 6-7 years ago.
You're a big old beefcake now.
Well, I'm something. I'm working.
Let's see if there's anything else. This is an interesting one. This is coming from Secret Beast, who says, "Should the Hall of Fame have a KO sub and fight of the night selection or section? P.S. Thanks for the weekly positive broadcasts. Enough negativity in the world. Love seeing Sean O'Shaughnessy's smiling face every Wednesday." Thank you so much. Aww. You will continue to see that, and I appreciate you. So this is an interesting one. The Hall of Fame already does have really a fight of the night section. That's the fight hall, wing of the hall. But KO or sub, is that an interesting idea?
I don't really know what that means. Like, how would that work exactly?
I would guess that they would choose one KO or one submission every year and throw that into that wing. Although, I mean, they already kind of do that, right? Because even even a few years ago or last year, I don't remember which one it was, they inducted a fight that ended in a knockout. I can't remember. I think it was Mark Coleman.
He's Maury Smith, right?
Maury Smith and Mark Coleman. There you go, the head kick. So I think they kind of do that to some degree, but having like these particular ones might be interesting. It might overcrowd the Hall of Fame very quickly, but also it's kind of a BS Hall of Fame.
Yeah. I would like to see them actually like build like a real tangible Hall of Fame. Like they have all the space now in Vegas. It would be cool to have them actually have like a real Hall of Fame, like, you know, like the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York.
That's true. Right now it is very much a sort of amorphous thing. It doesn't actually exist. You can't go
visit. It doesn't exist like digitally, like, but not, you can't like go to any one place and see like memorabilia and like, you know, plaques with the Hall of Famers. I think that would be awesome. I mean, there's really no like, is there even an MMA like Hall of Fame, like where there's like a museum or like a, there's not one that has like everything that it should need to have. And the UFC would have a lot of that stuff, or would have the capability of getting it. I mean, in a perfect world, it would be independent, and it wouldn't be a promoter, you know, and a promotion doing it. But the UFC has you know, the resources to do something like that more than others would.
Yeah, maybe one day, man. I feel like at some point we're gonna see something like that.
That would be cool. I mean, have you ever been to any of like the Basketball Hall of Fame or like the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown?
No, the closest I've gotten is a couple weeks ago in Georgia. They did the open workouts at the College Football Hall of Fame, so I was just generally get a sense of it. But
that's cool, though, right? I mean, it's nice.
Yeah, I love that kind of stuff. I'm a sports junkie, so like, I could spend the entire day probably in the NFL Hall of Fame or the Basketball Hall of Fame or something.
I've been to the Baseball Hall of Fame several times in Cooperstown, and I love it. I mean, it's awesome. The history is so cool.
Yeah. Let's see. Probably got one or two more. I'm seeing this one's coming from Strike MX, who says, "Congrats on the new gig, Mark. Gonna miss you on the A side. Question: do you like Rory or Fitch in Bellator this weekend? Good luck. Who are you picking?"
I'm picking Rory. I'm picking McDonald to win. I think
I agree with you.
Yeah, I think he just has. I mean, he's a little bit more well. You know, his whole game is well rounded. I'm not sure if Fitch will be able to control him on the ground for five rounds. So I'll take McDonald. McDonald's got good, you know, good grappling, good defensive wrestling. Obviously a good striker.
I would say, though, if John Fitch is able to pull off the upset, that would put his sort of post-prime, this chapter of his career in a pretty interesting place, probably alongside guys like a Michael Bisping, where extremely, extremely successful post-prime. That would be a great run for him if he's able to take out a guy like Rory McDonald, become champion in World Series of Fighting, PFL, and now Bellator as well in his post-UFC career.
Yeah.
A lot on the line for him.
Absolutely. It's a good story.
Let's see. Last one.
Chewy Sanchez, the only question that needs to be answered on today's The A-Side is, will the pro wrestling angle still be brought into the live chat from here on out? Congrats, Raymundi. Will it?
It's not, if it is, it's not going to be by me. So it will be up to the whims of the guests.
We're going to see pro wrestling next month in Vegas.
Yeah. and?
That's all I got.
All right. Well, on that note, I think let's do the promo and then we will get out of here.
Yeah.
I want to give you the floor, Mark. Go for it.
Wow, yeah, I have nothing prepared, which is consistent with previous weeks of promos. I have nothing written out or anything like that. I just want to say thanks. I just want to say thanks to everyone who watched this show. Again, I said earlier on, it hasn't been a show that's been going on for a long time. It's only been, we just started last July. So how many months is that? 9 months? It's like a 9 month old show. My math could be wrong there. But in the time that it ran, and it wasn't always smooth sailing for us technology wise. I know we had our issues here and there, but it's been really, really cool to see, especially over the last few days, how many people really kind of made the A-side a part of their Wednesday and a part of their weekly schedule. And that really, really touched me a lot, because when you're in the middle of stuff, when you're kind of going through the grind that we go through every week, you know, when there's, you know, fights every weekend and there's a show on Wednesday and there's like the MMA hour on Monday and days off and hours off are few and far between, you don't always see that, you know, that response. And then when something comes to an end, it's a lot more apparent. And I just want to say thanks to everyone who reached out to me over the last few days about the show, about missing me being on the show, congratulating me for the new opportunity. Thank you so much. You know, it really means everything to me. Fans, you know, peers, my, you know, our fellow journalists, that really means everything. People that I've worked with over the years in the past at previous stops. I mean, that really touches my heart. It really does. And I'm not an emotional guy. One thing stood out, and again, they all stood out to me, but I got a comment on Facebook from a woman who many, many years ago, she played high school soccer, and I covered high school soccer for the first job I ever got in journalism at the Queens Times Ledger newspapers. This was in like 2008. I was like 23 years old and I was covering high school sports, and she was a high school soccer star getting a college scholarship the following year, and her dad was diagnosed with brain cancer. And I wrote a number of feature stories about her and about her dad, and she went on to take her team to the city title. She won the city title with her team, and she actually wrote on my Facebook congratulating me for the ESPN job, saying that she has all the articles that I wrote 11 years ago about her and her dad, and she cherishes them. And that really got to me, man. Like, that's the kind of thing that it kind of means that, you know, what I'm doing around here is also touching other people, because it touches me every day, but it's also having an effect on others too. And that was I got a little emotional when I saw that. And I'm not gonna get emotional now, damn you, Ashadi. But yeah, I just want to say thanks. And it's not over. I mean, I'm still gonna be in the space, and I'm still gonna be friends with everyone at MMA Fighting. I'm gonna miss the team so much. You know, the team at MMA Fighting is just, it's been my family for, damn it, Sean, damn it.
I didn't do anything.
It's all your fault. I mean, you guys have been my family for 5 years. I've lived, ate, slept, breathed MMAfighting.com for 5 years of my life. And I feel like I've developed a personal relationship with every single person on the site. You know, from Brian Tucker, our editor, you know, to you and everyone. I mean, Esther and Casey are two of my closest friends in the entire world. So I'm going to miss everybody a lot. Is this really happening right now? This is so not me at all.
It's okay.
But it was not an easy decision to make, because I do love everyone dearly and I still will. But I guess, you know, when it comes to professional decisions and career decisions, I'm very excited about my next step. It's ESPN. Does not get any better than that. It is the pinnacle of sports journalism. When I told my mom that I was accepting an offer from ESPN, she cried herself, and she said that when you were a kid watching SportsCenter on your couch, you said, "I would love to work for ESPN one day." And I didn't even remember saying that, you know, because I'm just so like entrenched in what we do every day. But that was kind of like seeing the forest instead of the trees, because sometimes I see the trees and I don't back up and see the rest. And that's kind of been what this week has been for me, kind of seeing everything and talking to everyone. I hate that this is about me. I don't want that. Like, that's not why I'm in this sport or why I'm in journalism. I don't care about me. I want to tell the stories of others. I want to present facts. I feel inform people that they things that they may not know. That is why I do it. That's why I get up every single day. It's not to have the accolades. It's not to get, you know, the ESPN gig. It's really just to do, I'm in love with the work. And you know that, Sean, and that's all I want to do. And I'll be very, very happy, and comfortable, you know, when this stops being about all this stuff and the emotions in me and starts being about the work again, because that's where I'm at. That's my comfort zone, the work. And that's really it. Thank you guys so much. Everyone, a lot of the fans, everyone in MMA Fighting, Vox Media for continuing to make MMA a priority. It's cool. I heard from Kevin Lachlan yesterday, our old GM at SB Nation, and he's a guy that for a long time made MMA a priority at SB Nation, and I think it's done great. Thanks to everyone. Vox, SB Nation, MMA Fighting. Oh, you for being, you know. For being a great co-host, a great friend over the years. We'll still be friends, obviously, I hope. I'm gonna cut it off here before I get too emotional, but thanks. Thank you, everyone. It's been the time of my life.
Well done, man. Well said. It's okay. You can let it out.
No.
I will take the camera away from you while you recollect yourself. I had a little
thing in my contact here, so I just wanted to, you know, I'm good.
It's dusty in those saunas. I get it.
It is, and it's hot. I mean, I'm sweating.
I also do not have anything prepared. I don't know, man. I think 9 months ago when Ariel left, obviously the whole website, but was faced with an immense challenge of trying to replace basically, you know, one of the most talented people in our industry, and someone who really the website was based around, someone that he more or less was the host of the shows and everything kind of stopped and started with, or maybe not stopped there, but everything started with him and then trickled down. And we sort of were put in a position where we had to figure it out on the fly. And I cannot say how proud I am of the job that you and I did and the whole team, but you in particular, man. I mentioned it on Twitter and I even said it a little bit early on the show, but when we first met 5 years ago, we were both in more or less the same space within the industry. We were both very much trying to come up. We were trying to make our name. And actually, I think your first job in MMA was because of a job that I turned down at Fox Sports. So it's crazy how this stuff works. You ended up getting that spot, and then we ended up being on the road all this time. And you eventually joined MMA Fighting. And ever since then, we have been a rocket ship that took off. And I when we were faced with having to replace Ariel and figure out how we're going to do this moving forward, watching your leadership through very tough times, your determination, how hard you just wanted to work, how hard you made everyone else work. You set an example, I think, that everyone else wanted to follow. It was fucking inspiring. And I don't mean to swear, but it really was, man. I do not have words to say how proud I am of having seen where you started and where you are now. It is really incredible, man. It is all deserved. You are a maniac. You walk around with a backpack in your regular life when we're just going to lunch, because what if news breaks and you need to write it up? You're a psychopath when it comes to that. And so much respect to you, man. I cannot wait to watch what you do at ESPN. I know you're going to crush it. I am so excited for you, man. This is so well deserved. And I don't know. I think I am proud of sort of how much we had to step out of our comfort zones to figure out this show. And I don't know that we even ever figured out this show. To me, this show still is probably a work in progress, and it will continue to be so, but good job, man. I don't know that I probably should have prepared something, but I'm proud of you, buddy.
No, it's all good. And thank you so much for everything that you just said. That really means so much. It really does. I'm going to try to avoid getting emotional again, but I do want to say also one more thing. MMA Fighting is not going anywhere. You know, you guys are still going to, you know, be kicking ass and going to all the events and doing everything that MMA Fighting does. And one person does not make a website. And I know that you guys will carry on and still do great without me. And I'm looking forward to seeing that as well. And I wish you guys nothing but the best.
Absolutely. Like we said, this is not the end. This is just farewell for now. I will be back in the spot next week, and we will continue to keep the train moving. Can't wait to see what you do over there, man. It's gonna be fun.
And to be honest with you, I think it's better for the fans. I mean, more options and more. This is really just means more MMA coverage, you know, for everyone, and it's more to consume. And I think it's good. It's good for the fans and for the sport to have many options of coverage, not just one or two places to go for the best coverage.
Absolutely. So with that, I don't know if there's anything else to say. This has been the last episode of the S&M version of the A-Side Podcast. We'll be back next week. The train keeps moving and it'll be fun. We hope you guys will join us. In the meantime, thank you so much for making this a part of your life. Like we said, I was overwhelmed by the responses that we got. Sometimes it is hard to know whether what you're doing, people are actually paying attention. So we really appreciate all of you guys who have reached out to us over the last couple of weeks, or I guess over this week. Back again next week, the A-Side Live Chat Podcast. My name is Sean Alshadi. That man, for the final time, is Mark Ramondi. It has been a fun ride, and we hope you will join us moving forward in the future. Next week, enjoy the fights. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We appreciate you guys. We love you guys. Replay the show going up on all the places. This has been the A-Side Live Chat Podcast. Thank you. I'm going to finally end this now. A-Side.
A-Side.